And we're back. I'm Mia Zachary, and you are listening to Elemental Abundance. This is my weekly podcast where I have conversations with my friends about quantum thinking. We talk about the laws of the universe and how you can use those to create a life that you love. It is another gorgeous day here at Village Connector Media. The sun is shining, the air is warm, the clouds are fluffy, and the smiles, they are so bright. They are so bright. Why? Because we do what we love, and therefore we love what we do. And what I love to do is have my special guest back with me for another episode, Melvin D. Smith II of BusyBrains.com. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back.
I'm glad to have you another time.
Yes.
Since time is the conversation that we're having today.
It is everywhere.
It is everywhere. And, you know, I was looking for, there are so many quotes about time. You know, I love giving quotes on this show, and I love making reference to things. But, man, I got overwhelmed by all the time quotes.
Yeah.
And what stuck in my head right now is, of all things, song lyrics. Time is a river leading into nowhere. What a downer that is, man. But at the same time, this is going to be a cliche throughout the this is going to be a running
thing.
Joke.
Yeah, guys, so just understand, time is throughout the entire time that we're here.
The time that we're here. You know, time is a river leading to nowhere. I just feel like that's probably most people's attitudes to their lives. You live, you work and pay taxes, and you die.
Yeah.
So I'd love to start off with
some things in between.
And, you know, hopefully some good things in between.
Right.
But for the most part, you know, the reason for this show is to encourage people, to build them up, to give them something, another way of looking at things. And I know here in, you know, North America, the United States of Taskmasters, time, I think most people would say, is everything. To them, it drives their decisions, it guides their day, it dictates their actions and their thoughts. Time is a box that people have put themselves inside of.
And I, not to counteract that, but again, time is universal, and it's just interesting that depending where you are, time is still used, but it's seen differently.
Mm.
It's not so much
great
of a
point.
Crutch as it is something that we travel through. Just case in point, you go to Switzerland. Well, I didn't mean to use Switzerland, but seeing as how they make really nice clocks.
And it's a nice
time
place
pieces,
to visit.
Yeah, it is a nice place to visit, but they will take a break in the middle of the day and it's mandated. It's not your lunch break, but it's an extended period of time that you reflect essentially on what you're doing, who you are, and how you go about your business. But you don't do your business. I mean, I'm sure because, you know, people are people, they're going to, but they seem to have a happier outlook on life. Not only
just
them,
about
but
every well, speaking of first world countries, let's keep it there.
Yes.
But I think I don't know who does that list of like happiest countries. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
And I think like
world
isn't
News
like
Report?
Sweden or someplace like the happiest place in the world? And I think that the United States is actually pretty far down there,
yeah,
just because of the way that we use and relate to time.
And it's all because, well, we have to do this now, we have to do this now. And that's not to say you don't have to do it now. But, yeah, time has a different construct in different places. Like you said, Sweden, I actually know a very good friend of mine has a brother in Sweden. And he is so enjoying everything. Everything.
Yeah.
And this will probably come out later. But, yeah, there's something to deal with. How we spend our time as far as education and time. That if there's a group in Austin, Texas, that actually has a 4-day school week, 4 days, they go to school more times through the year, but they have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. And their test scores are starting to skyrocket. They've done this now for two years. So, of course, you can't do something like this and say, oh, yeah, a month from now we'll see how test scores do. They've been doing this for a while now. And it's actually shown an improvement because parents don't feel like they have to rush and cram everything into two-day weekend. And, you know, if you do certain things like go to church on Sunday, that's time out. Mm-hmm. If you have multiple children or one child in a sporting event, that's going to take time out. But they actually have a day where they can spend and do their chores or, you know, spend time with the family.
What a fantastic idea.
And so
love
it gives
that.
You another day. I have some old students who say, yeah, if we had a four-day work week, everybody would be so much happier. I've been a big proponent.
Like, well, 4 days is too many. Now I want 3-day work week, but that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an educator, I'm interested too. And once again, I forget where I read this or I saw this, but it's, you know, teenagers are a whole different human animal than, you know, babies, toddlers, and adults.
Yeah. Yep.
Because they're going through such phenomenal, monumental changes, their bodies are using more energy, and there's mm-hmm. just, like, you know, incredible, you know, based on my son alone, who I think has grown 2 inches in the last 6 months, you know, they're
probably
going through
has.
Phenomenal growth, and so their needs, their physical needs are different.
Mm-hmm.
My son hates school. He will be what do you think of school? I hate it. He hates school. Now, here's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's saying. Here's the truth. He loves history. Absolutely loves history class. He's really good at art. He likes his math teacher this year, which is a bonus. Do you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? He's enjoying science. But if you ask him, he'll tell you flat out. You know, you really have to drag the rest of it out, and he'll tell you flat out, I hate school. Why? Because he's a night owl like his mother. That's
right.
Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, he's a growing teenager who needs more sleep. But he's got to have his butt in a chair at 7 a.m. when, quite frankly, I'm not even thinking about rolling over because I don't have to be at work until 10 a.m.
Right.
So, you know, I read somewhere that there were somebody, and I'm sorry for messing this up, but somebody was going to experiment with starting the school days later.
Rampant.
And
a lot of groups
I believe
do
what I saw was like the test scores were higher because like the kids were better rested and their brains weren't tired and things like that.
Yeah, the thing with that is that if it starts later, that means it has to run later, which means that the after school curricular programs are going to be later.
Run them in the morning. You know, flip it. That's my solution. Anybody out there from the Board of Education in the United States, put the after school stuff before school and start school at a normal human time. We're not agrarian anymore. We don't have to be up with the cows and the crows.
But what some people do think is that that would then cause people not to do those things, which, again, it's a choice. Everything we do is a choice.
Mom and dad have to be at work at 9 a.m. anyway. So what difference does it make if they drop the kids off at 8:30 to do some fun activity to start their day in a positive energy and then go out through the academics? You still have to pick them up at the same time.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why, at least in Korea and in China and in a couple other Eastern-oriented countries, that they do. They have exercise in the morning. They will, when you see people doing Tai Chi in the morning, guess what? It's an exercise. And if anybody says, oh, well, they're moving slow, how can they be exercised? Try it. Tai Chi, true Tai Chi is not an easy thing.
And Tai Chi means to move your energy, right?
Right.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It's essentially, and this is something I wanted to talk to you about earlier, on an earlier program, and I didn't think to do it, but when you stretch in the morning, if you just simply put your hands up over your head, and yes, I'm doing that now, folks, that on the
me
radio,
too.
I got my
me
hands
too.
Up in the head, in the air, and if you lean over to one side and then kind of bend forward at your waist, you're pulling your core muscles, and when you stretch your core muscles, you're increasing blood flow, and that's really what exercise is about, blood flow and putting your energy in different places. But to take it back to what we're talking about right now, people don't want to take the time to do it. And
exactly.
And one of the things that I've just come to realize, because I looked to see how long it took, and 30 seconds, 30 seconds is all it takes to put your hands over your head, bend over at one side, lean forward, feel a little pull, and then do it on the other side. You don't have to do planks or do push-ups or do sit-ups or run up and down the stairs or whatever, because that does take up more of your day. But if you just stretch in the morning, I'm not an expert, but this is my opinion that I guarantee you'll feel better through the day.
Exactly, and you'll look fantastic. For those of you who aren't familiar, you can look this up on the internet. There are two renowned actresses. One is Lena Horne, and the other one is Sophia Loren. Now, both of these women are in their late 70s, looking like fantastic. 50 and acting like 30.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to give a lot of credit to genetics and bone structure because they are both incredibly beautiful women. But they swear by the fact that, you know, they have been able to make time stand still with regard to their physical beauty by getting up and stretching every morning. Yeah. They're not runners. They're not doing aerobics. They're not doing Xbox or, you know, any of these other, you know, things. They're literally getting up and stretching in the morning. So now what I'd like to wrap back to, because Melvin brought up so many good points in a short period of time.
Time.
Hashtag, you know, time.
I am. You know what? I'm going to mark every single time.
Every single time we say time.
That's two.
So, for the sake of the show, I'm hoping that I have international listeners, which is awesome. But for the sake of the show, I'm going to stick with North American mindsets for right now. Mm-hmm. And I think what it comes down to is our relationship to time, as we've just kind of, you know, been giving examples of. Americans want to fill every single second of their time, and they feel guilty or unproductive or
unaccomplished.
I guess unaccomplished, you know, by comparison with other people, if they aren't doing something every minute of every day. And so I think other countries in the world have a different concept, a different perspective, or just a different relationship in that time is something that you spend. You said that earlier, you know, you spend your time. So if you, for whatever reason, chose to think of time as a commodity and you do spend it, then you need to budget it like you would your money, for example. So one of the things about time is that it's all in our heads. Why? Because we're humans and that's how we experience it is really all in our heads. So as Melvin was saying, it's like, okay, how many people out there, myself included, say they don't have time to exercise? Oh my God. Because what do you have in your head? You have in your head that you have to drive 15 to 30 minutes to go to a particular facility. Mm-hmm. And then you have to spend another 10 minutes to 15 minutes showering and changing into special clothes. And then you have to walk over to the equipment. And then in order to feel the burn, you know, you've got to spend at least an hour doing whatever you're doing. And all you're seeing is like, dear God, there's 2 hours of my day just gone. But if you got out of bed tomorrow morning and you raised your hands over your head and you bent over slightly to the side and then you bent over slightly forward at the waist and then you kind of shifted over to the other side and then stood up straight and then you looked at your clock and you're like, wow, seriously? That really was only 30 seconds of time?
Yep.
And so I think, you know, we, at least here in the United States, we put so much undue pressure and stress and expectation on ourselves, our children, our family, our friends, our coworkers, our employees, on everyone around us, based on the artificial construct of time.
And I think that's because the idea is that if you don't, somebody else will.
Mm.
And if you don't do it, then somebody else will have that advantage over you or whatever it is you're doing. And in some cases, yeah, that's true, because they are the ones that are taking the energy or using the energy effectively and using time effectively to do those things. That if, you know, again, there's no such thing as being 100% ready. I mean, once you're in the moment, sure, you're ready 100%. That just means you're committed. And I think that's where a lot of people have a discrepancy, that they're thinking about it so much that they're not using their time effectively to go ahead and do it, commit to it, and then say, okay, you know, this is something that, you know, it's not for me, or, you know what, I can spend more of my life, more of my time,
check
mark, to do it. And, you know, that's where, you know, because I was a member of a fitness center for years, and oh, guess what, ran out of time, couldn't do it. Or thankfully it was a 24-hour, so once the kids were in bed, once I had gotten some grading done, I would actually go work out. And like you, I'm a night owl too. I can be up till 3 o'clock in the morning. If I'm doing something, I can be productive. Wake me up at 6 o'clock. Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
No, I'm hitting the snooze literally three times, and then I'm ready to get things started.
Exactly.
But you know, it's one of those things that I'm actually looking to do, is if I get up earlier, then I feel more productive through the day because I can stay up later with no issue. But I have to have moved around a little bit if I'm slogging through the routine. And I think that's where, again, a lot of people feel like, well, you know, I don't want to go here because that's going to mean I have to budget, just as you said, budget time. And then it becomes a routine, and then you don't want to do it because it's no fun.
Right, right.
And, well, we all,
I want to wrap back quickly just to touch on something you just said, that people feel like they have to, you know, do something right now, otherwise someone else will get ahead of them. That is one way of looking at it. And here in Village Connected Community, we have another way of looking at it. We look at we are collaborators.
Mm-hmm.
We are supportive team members as opposed to,
antagonists
or competitors,
right.
You know, competitors. So here's the thing. Let's say you and I both have an idea for a brand new type of coffee mug. Mm-hmm. And here in North America, time just automatically kicks in. The minute you have a new idea or your imagination sparks your creativity, time automatically kicks in here because it's like, oh my gosh, I have to do something with this or else someone else will do something with it first. But I'm going to put forth just the supposition that we can both be doing something at the same, hit the pencil, time, and come up with independent ways to make a better coffee mug. That's, and both of our contributions are going to contribute to humanity. You know, time doesn't have to be your taskmaster. Time can also be a gift. Because the other thing is, you know, I'll put myself in the hot seat because I'm impulsive. Let's say I rush to market it and I'm like, man, here's the brand new innovative, you know, best coffee mug ever, and I did it first. I beat you. I'm ahead of you in time.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a different idea of time, and you know that time is also a gift that gives you the experience of thinking about it a little bit more, of experimenting a little bit more, of testing and trying out and getting feedback and just, you know, seeing how things work. And when you come out with your brand new coffee mug a month, a year, whenever from now, yours might be the better one because you took the time to put some thought and energy, you know, put more thought and energy behind it.
And that kind of goes to, well, at least the sciencey side, that it's relative.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes beyond just a sciencey part, but you know, for me, using the example that you had, for me to be able to use or take more time, supposedly I'm able to think of the kinks, think of the ways that a mug may or may not work, if it's something that's going to be new or different. But then again, as you said, by us staying here within the construct of what we have in the United States, that's not the usual mindset, because there's people are always thinking, people are always innovating, which, you know, is a really cool thing about people, is that we do innovate, we do want to make things better because we want to understand other things. But there's always the other side, which is the monetary side, and the
time
way things
is money.
Are here, yeah, and money is time. That if you don't get something out in a certain time, than somebody else is, which means you're missing out on the money. And that, I think, is what generates it's that cycle that, you know, if I don't do it now, somebody else is going to do it. And if I don't do it, I'm not going to make the money. And they are. It's not so much that it's antagonistic, that, you know, I don't want them to make that money per se. But if you can do it first, then you can have more of it.
Right.
I can't think of the guy's name. The person who owns Virgin Records.
Oh, Richard Branson.
Yeah, and he's getting money together for a fleet of ships to go out into space. Well, he now can think about those things because he doesn't have to think about the money.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, whatever he's going by now, Sean Puffy Combs, whatever he's going by now these days.
Puff Diddy or something.
Yeah, he put in work and work and work at the beginning of his career, running from one place to another place. He was doing jobs that nobody else wanted to do. But he knew the city. He wanted to know the city. He wanted to be sure that people knew that they could count on him to get the job done. And now he has that extra time to do things that he wanted to do in the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if people are thinking, okay, I've got to get in this rat race first, and then I'll have time to relax later. And you know, where that all falls out, you know, not too sure. Because some people,
well,
it takes longer to do others.
It falls out here at Village Connected Community, where one of the things that we do is teach people how to go from an employee mindset to an entrepreneurial mindset of having multiple streams of income so that you don't have to, you know, be in that rat race and rely on only one.
Right.
I feel like in this, you know, American society, we use time against ourselves to some extent. We either make something a priority over other things, or we make it an excuse. So what do I mean by that? How many parents out there, you know, their kid is like, hey, can we go to the park? I don't have time. I have to do this email. I have to answer these phone calls. I'm working on such and such.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use time as a way to separate ourselves from other people sometimes. We use it as an excuse for not relating and connecting in the ways that fulfill us and evolve us and grow us as human beings. Or we use it as an excuse, as in, well, I have this amazing idea for this innovative new coffee mug, but, well, I don't really have time to pursue that. I don't really have time. You know, so let's talk a little bit about what is time. So I went online.
Because everything is true.
Because everything is true on the internet. Well, I'm really kind of careful about my sources. So I chose Stanford University for my particular sources for this. So I have this one definition that basically says, this is Gottfried Leibniz, Leibniz, that time is neither an event nor a thing, and thus it is not itself measurable, nor can it be traveled. And I'm like, what? What is he saying? So I kind of got it. It's like, okay, that goes back to Aristotle, who's basically saying that time does not exist independently of the events that occur in time.
Right.
So once again, I'm going, what? So all of that research led me to Ernst Mach, M-A-C-H, who basically says time is an abstraction at which we arrive through the changes of things.
Right. Yeah, again, we as people have to quantify things so that way we can better understand them. And as you pass through events, you're going to subject those events to something. So what do? Well, we call it time, whether it's a second, a minute, an hour, or what these people are talking about, great deals of time, not years, decades, centuries, or what geologists call epochs, that you have a certain amount of things going on, and then within a time, before a change, such as the and I can't remember the name of it, and I should know this, but the something called the KT line that happened when the big, huge asteroid collided with Earth. You have all these fossils. You have evidence of reptilian-like creatures before this KT line, and then afterwards, they're not there, and you have the advent of mammals. Reptiles are still around, but you have more mammals. So you have usually big, huge acts of something or another, whether it be nature or but either way, it's a change. I mean, I'll never forget in it was the 8th grade history, and we were going through some of the topics, what we were going to be going over, and somebody raised their hand and said, you know, why are we studying wars? And the teacher said, because that's how we document history, from one war to the next war. And we're like, oh, okay. So again, it's a passage of time, but it's how it is that people record history. Yeah. And assign time to it. I mean, the great Carl Sagan at one point in time had said that, you know, it's one of the time is something that is resistant to a simple definition.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. you can't necessarily say how long a second is without knowing what a second is. But then how long is a second? Again, it's a construct that we as people make up. And, you know, we're going to go into that a little bit later as far as what is a second.
Yeah.
Because had a conversation with the director, not outreach, of public affairs for the National Institute for Science and Technology. And she's a wonderful person. And what she does, interesting, we talked about earlier about finding things on the internet. She says that she has a team, and they spend hours upon hours of doing background checks. So they will get a snippet of information, and then as a team, they come together and piece it all together from things on the internet. So they're cross-checking, making sure that the information is right. But the thing is, and I asked her about this, at NIST, they have, and I said, science, technology, standards, and technology. So it's the National Institute for Standards and Technology. Okay. Because they deal with measurements. And they have one of the quote-unquote true atomic clocks. And be sure you get the website later on. But they have a device that, you know, particles are sent up and down through the device. And it's so accurate, the stuff that they're using in it won't lose or gain a second in over 100,000 years. And actually, I think it's longer than that.
Oh, wow.
But that's what's setting our standard for a second and time. And there are other places throughout the world that use something similar to it, but it the one at NIST is one of the standards. And like I said, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I don't understand it because I'm not on that particle level, but on the superficial level, it's just like, wow, okay, so they're saying what a second is. And then when you have more of those seconds, you have a minute, hour, a day. And keeping in mind that a day is not when the sun is up. A day is 24 hours of time that it takes the globe to do what it does around the sun.
And is any of that real? And the reason I ask that is, if that atomic clock stops working, if all the clocks that we've created, if all the timepieces that we've created disappear, how will we as humans experience time? In other words, how did we used to experience it before we invented clocks and measurement? And I think it goes back to that, you know, it's an abstraction that we arrive at through the change of things. A couple years ago, I had my, fifth surgery. And, you know, that was several months of recovery,
right,
spending a lot of time in bed. And I, you know, you have to take everything off before you go into the operating room. So mm-hmm. I took off my watch. Now, my watch was this beautiful waterproof Timex that I slept in. The only time that ever came off was when I was getting in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
So I slept it. So I always knew what time it was.
Right.
Even in my sleep, I could wake up from a dead sleep and know what time it was. And so one of the things that was most freeing for me was when I took that watch off before going into surgery. I've never put it back on. I still have, I'm still a slave to time in that I have made commitments to people to be at a certain place at a time that we agree that we have universally globally agreed on is, you know, Eastern Standard or Eastern Daylight or whatever. But as we're sitting here talking, I'm not looking at anything. You're not looking at anything. We agree that time has passed, but how do we know that it's passed? Because we've experienced a change. Well, how do we know we've experienced a change? Because there's the 1 billion neurons in our brains, and some of them, you're the neuroscience guy, so you give me the technical stuff, but but you know, somewhere in this massive gray and white matter, there are certain nerves that hold on to the observations that we make of our experience, and we call that memory. So time is just comparing this memory impression within the, you know, electrochemical processes within our brains. And I'm comparing this instant that I'm speaking to the last instant that I was speaking, and that's how I, quote, know that time has passed.
Right. Yeah, and then you get into the whole thing about cycles, circadian cycles. I mean, at some point in time in the day, you're going to feel different than another part in time of the day. So again, it's still
and
a documentation of
that.
A shift. It's a shift.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we didn't have the, and I don't use a watch so much anymore, but I have a timepiece on my phone that I use. Well, even if we didn't have those things, you can go outside and you can see that big globe in the sky moving from one place to another place.
Not on a rainy day. How do I know what time it is on a rainy day?
Well, actually, as it turns out, if we're not using electronics or some sort of technology, rainy days are in some places, they're happy days because you're not committing yourself to a time to have one thing done here and one thing done there. But, you know, again, it goes to the cycle of what we've become accustomed to. You get tired at some point. And we attribute right now, for the most part, except for those who work third shifts and have worked third shifts for so long, their rhythms have changed.
Or if you've been sick like I have for the last week.
I mean, because everything then gets thrown off. But you still have some sort of a habitual cycle, which is interesting that earlier we were talking about teenagers. And their clocks are so thrown out of whack because they've got so many different chemicals going through their brain at that point in time that they can feel bored or, you know, at one point they will be up and ready to take on the world, and the next minute, you know, you're shaking them physically to get up. It's like, well, they actually literally can't get up because their bodies are just going through some changes. There was, now this is really tangential, but I'll never forget the first year I taught. I was in Iowa, and I had a student who was absent Friday, and I was told that he missed a football game on Saturday, and nobody saw him outside playing on Sunday.
Hmm.
And on Monday, he came back in, and he was literally 2 inches taller.
Wow.
And people are like, yeah, whatever. He had to have a specially made helmet because he played football. And his specially made helmet didn't fit anymore. A shirt that he had normally didn't fit anymore. Now, mind you, the shirt, you know, was probably a little bit small on
right.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean,
and that's not a typical. I mean, that's not really typical of growth to have that happen in a weekend.
Yeah, no. But I mean, he was so knocked out; his body didn't know how to act. So it's just interesting that you bring up that, you know, if we didn't have technology, how would we progress through time? But haven't you ever noticed, I mean, you not wearing the watch or when you have a weekend where you don't have a commitment, you can free flow.
Yep.
And when you free flow, you feel like, oh, okay. Hey, there's a flower. Hey, let me go smell the flower.
Yep.
Hey, there's a bumblebee by the flower. Or if it's raining outside, hey, you know, that rain sounds really relaxing. Yep. If it's not a torrential downpour like we had a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh. I love torrential downpour. I sleep so good in a torrential downpour. Yeah, I did not enjoy the congestion and the coughing and the body aches and all the rest of it. But it's interesting that being sick for the last week has really shifted my perspective on time.
Right.
You know, that my circadian rhythm was completely thrown off because you're not feeling well and your body needs rest. So, you know, I wasn't waiting for night to fall asleep. I was falling asleep after only being awake for 2 hours. time is a gift, and I don't think we always see it that way. So, you know how you're sitting at the MVA and you're waiting for them to call your number so that you can be among the hundreds of people to like re-register your car or change your driver's license or whatever thing you do.
I have 2 weeks to do that.
It drags. It just, oh my God, talk about, I'm a pretty creative person. I have a great imagination. I am rarely bored, except when I'm waiting at the Department of Motor Vehicles to do something related to my car. Time just drags. Or, like you made a comment in the last episode that we recorded together, and I said something about, oh, we've hit the 45-minute mark, and you're like, what, already? So when you're when you're engaged, mm-hmm. when you're mentally and emotionally and engaged, time seems to just fly by. And the reason for that is I believe this is Tony Robbins. I don't remember if it was his Ultimate Edge or if it was one of his other, YouTube videos mm-hmm. I was watching. But he said that we really experience time not in counting off the atomic decay of cesium.
Right. Which is what it is,
which
guys.
Is what
it is
cesium. Which it is. But we actually experience time based on the emotion, the engagement, and the meaning that we give it. So yeah, right
now... That wasn't a purposeful pause. That's us thinking, folks.
So, yeah, really, it's like time flies when you're enjoying yourself, and it drags when you aren't. So I am going to put forth the theory that you can control time. And you're like, what? Yeah, go ahead.
Which is why time is so fun to discuss or make your head hurt.
Exactly. So if we're making your head hurt at the moment, go ahead and email us at feelgood@elementalabundance.com. You are more than welcome to join in the conversation, and we welcome your questions, your comments, and your whatever diatribe you want to go on about whatever we're saying. But it's my show, so I'm going to say that you can control time. And what I mean by that is that you can control your experience of time by what you choose to make a priority and what you choose to use as an excuse.
And I saw you writing that down earlier. And one of the interesting things, or a lot of the interesting things, is that when people start thinking about what you were saying, manipulating time, that doesn't mean to go back through time or go forward through time. It's how you use your time, please correct me if I just put words in your mouth.
Mm-mm.
But I mean, and that's really kind of what it's all about, how it is that you use your time at that point in time, because either you're doing something that you enjoy, in which case time seems to go faster, or you're doing something that you're not necessarily enjoying, in which time seems to drag on, which I'm going to bring up an interesting, maybe not so interesting, but at least a point. So why is it that it takes me so long to do the dishes?
Oh, no, see.
Why?
But that's your mental construct. That's your experience. Because I bet you if you had like one of those little digital egg timers, and as soon as you like started the water running in the sink, you hit the timer, you did the dishes, and then you went back and turned the timer off, you would find that you've probably spent no more than 5 minutes. Even though it felt like a half an hour.
No, literally, it takes me longer to do the dishes. My wife said, if we've got a set of dishes, she can always get it done quicker. And it's not because she's enjoying it. And but you know, that probably has nothing to do with time and more so,
with your technique.
With technique. But yeah, I was like, okay, I'm spending, 25 minutes on doing dishes. That's it. And I also have dishes. My wife, not. They're done. They're done. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there because that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
When we did, I was like, yeah, no, it's not time. It's technique.
Yeah, so, you know, if you actually take that chunk of lasagna and scrape it into the trash before you try to put it in the dirty dishwasher, maybe that'll accelerate your time experience.
No such thing as leftovers in my household.
Okay.
No such thing. I got two growing kids. Nope.
Oh, my gosh. So,
actually, there's something I do want to ask you about.
Yeah.
When you were talking about that we are time travelers, and this actually kind of goes also to what you think of as belief of quantum metaphysical thought. To you, what is quantum thought, quantum thinking? Because quantum thinking to you might be different from what I think of as quantum, just because I'm coming at it from the science perspective.
And no, that's a great question. So to me, quantum is kind of drilling down from the bigger picture to the automatic thought. You know, we're programmed to think about things in a certain way because of the society we live in and the culture that we're experiencing. To me, quantum thinking is taking the time to really examine something, to look at what it means in general, but also what does it mean to you and for you? And once you have a meaning for yourself, how does that change your experience of it? And once you change your experience of it, how do you create something new from it? That's what I'm, and I don't know that I'm using the textbook definition. That's just what's on my mind, because for me, you know, time is this big looming thing that's ticking down the experience of our life until we die. That's one way of looking at it. Time is this beautiful space in which I can daydream and look at the clouds and feel joy and experience. Time is something that I spend on client work. Time is something that I share with my son as we experience something together. So it comes down to, you know, quantum thinking for me is, how do I use time? How is time used against me? How is time used for my benefit? How can I change my experience of time? Number one, I take my watch off. Number two, I never schedule anything before 10 o'clock in the morning because I know I'm not getting up for it.
Right.
Unless I have a court date for one of my many speeding tickets, and there's time.
Velocity.
Velocity. you know, and it's about focus. I think this is what it really comes down to for me, is it comes down to what is now? What is the present? You know, there's a joke that we have here in the village because we've been going through a lot of spiritual and metaphysical evolution over the last couple months. And because of that, we are experiencing time very differently. For right now, so the joke that we have around here is it's either today or it's yesterday or it's later now.
Yeah.
There's not a tomorrow. There's just later now. There's today. And then everything from literally 24 hours ago to 24 months ago, it's all yesterday.
Right.
Because it gets confusing to say, hey, remember when? Well, wait, was that 3 weeks ago or was that 3 months ago? I don't know. It's yesterday. It's all yesterday. Right. And so what's happening is I'm finding myself appreciating time more. I'm not thinking about how many more minutes there are until, you know, I'm no longer on this existential plane and I go, you know, my energetic essence goes back to source. I'm thinking about, how do I choose to experience this moment? I'm not using moment as in minute, as in a scientific mathematical measurement of time,
right,
but this moment. You know, I can choose to experience this moment as in it is, you know, 44 minutes and 45 seconds into this broadcast, or I can choose to say, Wow. In this moment, I am energetically connected to another human being by the name of Melvin, and I am operating at a high energetic frequency in this moment because I'm enjoying the experience of what we're doing, and I'm not thinking, I'm focused. This is the key to how we experience time. I'm focused on this conversation right now. I'm not thinking about the mistake that I made yesterday or the negative experience that I had yesterday. I'm not thinking into, you know, what's coming up, the to-do list of client things that I need to do or the, you know, the errands that I need to run. I'm experiencing time as a little bubble of excellent connection.
And let's take that and go back to what we were talking about earlier as far as what goes on here as opposed to what might go on to other places. Would you say that there's a greater connection? And again, I'm just using the idea of like a Buddhist thought that you're going to have different levels of things happening to you. Mm-hmm. At some point in time, it's not evil. It's not dark. It's not bad. It is. And then you're going to shift to the other direction. And then within that within that middle point, you have what they consider harmony. And that you can't necessarily assign good, bad, but we as people, again, have to quantify something. So we call it good or evil or good or bad. I'm not going to say black and white because that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's an excellent point.
So, I mean, it's essentially where you go and how you're able to use effectively what you can do at that moment. And again, shooting back to what we talked about earlier in the past show, where your resonance is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are able to, and it's funny that I'm saying this because I'm going through this too. And I think we as all people do until you know, I'm not going to say you're ascending or you become sainthood or anything like that. But once you are able to kind of navigate easier through the good times and the bad times, because they go hand in hand, then your whole idea of living in the moment is more enriched.
Exactly.
And so by not us saying, okay, well, you know, at this time, you know, I need to go pick up my children from school so I can do something else and do something with them, it's just something that between now and then, because that's an assigned time.
And it's also a perception. So, oh my gosh, you just said so many great things in the last minute. So I want to wrap back to, you were talking about good and bad, and I'm going to agree with you in that, just like in the last episode we talked about energy is,
mm-hmm.
Experience is.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, let me try to think of something that's really cool. Okay, so you're in your car and you're on I-95 and you're on your way, you know, to a meeting,
mm-hmm.
and traffic is slow, and you know, you experience that as a frustration. You're wasting time in traffic. But that's a judgment. It just is. You are where you are. You're experiencing what you're experiencing, and then you decide to put judgment on it. Because here's the thing. You have no way of knowing that the fact that that traffic was backed up to, quote, slow you down and to draw out your experience of time to possibly prevent you from, you know, getting broadsided by somebody who was also experiencing time in a different way. So there's that. So first of all, it's the judgment. And everything's going to come back to perspective. So a couple weeks ago, I'm at that place that has coffee and a green mermaid. They're not a sponsor, so I'm not saying their name. And the person in front of me, you know, the barista person, she was the only one. Mm-hmm. So a little bit overworked trying to take care of all the customers at the same time.
Right.
You know, everything at once. The person in front of me was a little bit impatient because they were trying to get their coffee because, you know, they have to go to work. This was Columbus Day, by the way, which is a holiday in some places here in the United States. You know, it's like they have to go to work. You know, so they're experiencing this time as, you know, accelerated because they're wasting it. They're running out of it, and they're choosing to put a negative label on what they're experiencing right now. And I was also waiting for coffee, and you know, she looked at me and she's like, oh, you know, do you have to go to work today too? I'm like, no, I get to go to work. I love what I do. I love the place that I do it. I love the people that I do it with. I was leisurely getting a cup of coffee because I didn't have to be here at a specific time. Right. There are things that needed to be accomplished throughout the day, but it wasn't like it had to be done, you know, get it done. So it all comes back to perspective, I think, in that, you know, as we're going through this human existence, you know, how time affects you and what you do with it really comes down to perspective. I'd like to share. Well, did you have another point before I share this quote?
No, share the quote, because there's something I want to ask later on, because even then it goes with the ability to hold on to time, or at least vibe your experience into time. But
okay, so I believe that I got sick last week in order to slow me down. You know, I've really been running at a high energy rate, really been in high production mode. And there's only so much of that your body's going to be able to take when you're not sleeping and you're expending a lot of energy. And so the universe, I choose to say universe, other people say God, Allah, Buddha, you know, infinite energy, infinite intelligence, whatever. But I believe the universe is always perfect in its timing, in that while I was laid up in bed, you know, sick and coughing, I discovered this, that's
realized,
air quotes,
found.
I found, you know, I found for myself this book called The Power of Now. And the author is Eckhart, E-C-K-H-A-R-T, Eckhart Tolle, T-O-L-L-E. And it's a guide for spiritual enlightenment, but man, it's also a wake-up call for those of us who are spinning our wheels and running through the time that we've been gifted, thinking that we have to fill all of those atomic seconds with some kind of activity. So I'd like to read this to you. So, quote, "What you perceive as precious is not time, but the point that is out of time, the now. The more you are focused on time in what we call past and future, the more you miss the now, the most precious thing there is. The past gives us an identity, and the future holds the promise of salvation or fulfillment in some form. Both of those are illusions. Nothing has happened in the past. It happened in the now, and we perceive it as past. Nothing will happen in the future. It will happen in the now, because you cannot create beyond this moment." That I'm extrapolating at the end there. That was the end of the quote. But it kind of goes to the same thing that British physicist Julian Barbour says in his book, The End of Time. There is only now. There is only now. Time, well, he goes on to say that there is no time, and we don't have time to have that conversation. But I love the concept of this. I love the way that this concept feels, because, you know, again, people have priorities, and in our North American societies, I'm going to go ahead and make a judgment and call some of it bad and wrong, because we're prioritizing technology over conversation. We're prioritizing activity over connection, and we're missing the opportunity that now affords us to enjoy the moment, to experience humanity with other humans. And I'm also love this concept of the now, because, you know, we are eventually going to end this biological, physical system that we are experiencing in. Your body is going to die and decay. But the real you, the true you, the energetic essence of who you really are, continues. However, the only way that we know at this time of how to experience this consciousness of what we really are is in this physical body. So if you've been wanting to write a book, or you've wanted to learn how to play guitar, or you've wanted to look up all the scientific stuff we've been talking about on the episode today, what are you waiting for? You're waiting for this mythological illusion called the future. And that's not promised to you. There is only now. You look like you want to jump in, so jump in.
Well, along with that, because one of the things that I'm still struggling with is the fact that, okay, well, if I do this now, that means I won't be able to do that now. And, you know, that kind of goes with what we had been saying earlier. It's not necessarily that it's negative. It's just that it is. Because even then, at some point in time, yeah, let me mark that down, that the people who come up with this have that time, or they're able to make time to do those sorts of things.
Ooh.
Because
are you making it, or are you choosing to prioritize it?
Okay, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, and I'm not putting this in one particular place, but I'm reflecting right now solely on my time in Baltimore.
Okay,
when I was at a school in Baltimore, two-parent household, dad was working second, third shift, mom was working first shift, and sometimes part of second shift. So where does that put a person to have the time to do something with their child's school? Because if they did that, then they would miss out on the ability to do this, that, or the other with their child at some other point in time.
I'm going to get a raft of shit for what I'm about to say. But those particular people chose how they were going to spend their time. They chose a job that required them to spend their time in a second and third shift. I'm not trying to solve everyone's socioeconomic problems, but I am saying we always have choice on how we utilize and experience our time. Dad might have chosen a different job that had a different payment and time requirement structure so that he could be available. People think that they're stuck in what they're experiencing, but you always have choice. Choice requires sacrifice. What does sacrifice mean? Sacrifice is not giving something up. That's what we think it is. Look it up in the dictionary if you're out there listening. To sacrifice is to make sacred. It is to prioritize something over something else. I'm not trying to criticize the parents that you're referring to. I'm not trying to criticize anyone who's listening, but you chose how you're going to spend your time and what you're going to spend it on. If you choose to make your relationship with your child or your child's education a priority, then you're going to have to spend your time in a different way. That might mean a different job. It might mean two jobs that have flexibility that allow you a gap in your day to be present for whatever you need to be present for.
Yeah, that's my devil's advocacy. Because even then, in the similar situation, one thing was put to the side, in my case, finances, so that way I could do those things. Now, I asked my wife, because I was a full-time teacher, and for those who don't know, full-time teaching means full-time plus more.
Plus personal time.
Because if you're going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, planning, grading, having to get up at 6:30 in the morning to be at work, and then you have Saturday to spend time with your family, and then you've got Sunday to start it all over again, you know, that works for some people. And at my point in time, it wasn't working. Because I wanted to be sure that I spent time with my kids, because I wanted to see how they were progressing. I wanted to be more of an active role in who they were going to be. Now, at this point, they're probably like, you know, Dad, okay, you've seen us grow. They're probably ready for me to get back in the classroom. just because now I'm spending so much of it, so much of it, as well as, you know, finances would be nice to be back at that level. Although, you know, teaching isn't all that for finances, but it's something that I feel I can do with my time to get others interested in sciences so they can talk about time. And that's where I kind of wanted to throw that devil's advocacy at you, that, you know, as we go through and figure out, okay, well, this is what I want to do, that doesn't mean that's the only way you have to do it. But when you take a moment and live in the moment and you figure out, okay, well, this is what I want to do.
Yep.
You know, you want to write a book. Okay, well, that doesn't mean that you have to spend 3 hours one night writing a book.
But you could. Is why I'm calling bullshit on the whole I don't have time. Run the numbers for me. I forget what it is, but it's like 16,000 minutes. I don't remember. But we all have the same number of hours in any given week.
Yeah.
What you choose to do with those hours. Now, am I going to be the person who sacrifices and gets up earlier in the morning to get something done? Not only no, but heck no. But if I am engaged and something is a priority and I'm willing to sacrifice for it, I'll stay up between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. to get it done. Right. So here's the thing I'm going to ask people. If you don't think you have enough time, I want you to mark it down. I want you to take a sheet of paper and I want you to put 48 spaces on it. And I want you to make a note for one day. Make a note of everything you do every half hour for 24 hours. Yes, you can write off the whole block that you're asleep. Don't be a smartass. But I want you to really look at what you're doing in the time that you claim you don't have. And I'm going to argue all day long and twice as long on Sunday that you do have all the time. You don't have to make the time. You have it. What you have to do is prioritize, focus, decide. Having time, experiencing time in a positive way, loving your life, loving what you do and who you do it with, that's a decision. I created this show as one of the many manifestations of an evolution that I'm going through, an ascension that I'm in the process of. If you ever want the long story, I'll be happy to tell it to you, but I want you to understand your life can change at the speed of a decision. My life changed on March 10th, 2013, approximately 6 p.m., since we're talking about time. I wasn't going to get out of bed that day. I wasn't going to get out of bed ever again that day because of where I was in my life, my situations, my mental state, and the chronic depression that I was experiencing. A friend called me. We were supposed to be having dinner. And my first instinct was to beg off. Whatever your beliefs are, I'm not challenging that. I'm simply sharing my experience. But I felt a voice that said, lean on women of faith until you can lean on your own faith. And in that moment, when I was going to do whatever I was had in mind at that time, I said, you know what? I want better. And that was it. It wasn't a big, drawn-out, detailed, you know, this is the map of all the changes I'm going to make to experience things in a different way. It was just a heartfelt cry. In that moment, I want better. Now, what was that? Was that an atomic second? Was that an epoch? Or was that an emotional experience to which I attached meaning? That's what time meant in that moment. And my life changed at the speed of that decision because everything that I've done over the past 2 years has just elevated me emotionally, mentally, physically, in every possible way. I experience time very differently now than I did 2 years ago when I was working at a law firm in a windowless cubicle that I hated. Why? Because I have a different focus now. I choose how I spend and budget my time. And you can do the same thing.
And it's amazing how it all comes to a realization. And circling around that, I want to bring up a person, a really, to me, a very, very special person, who some of you have not heard of, Dr. Ronald Mallett. He is a physicist at the University of Connecticut, and he had an experience where he was, when he was young, he, his brother, his dad would do things together. His dad was, in essence, remaking himself. He would take apart TVs, put them together again with the kids there. They would take apart toasters. They would do anything and everything together. And his dad was a, Dr. Mallett was, his dad was a very heavy chain smoker. And he had a heart attack when he was 10 years old, and he passed away from it. And what Dr. Mallett did is that he completely immersed, submersed, however you want to say it, himself into books. Well, he got wind of one book, The Time Machine by H.G. Wells. And he said at that point, when he was going through that book, he knew he wanted to be able to travel time. And a lot of other scientists will quote that book as what got them into the sciences. But what Dr. Mallett has done is that he's actually taken the ideas put forth by Albert Einstein, which I'm sure everybody's heard of, but he is actively making a machine that he can send information. Now, notice I'm saying information back through time, which in itself is, you know, it gives me warm tinglies on the inside.
Yeah.
Just to be able to do that. And he says, you know, I'm not trying to send a person back. Right now, that is not possible. But
that's so
based
cool.
off of what I think I can do and what he's looking to do, that other people will be able to do it.
Yeah. Well, they've already done it, right? I can't remember if this is a law, a theory, or whatever, but entanglement. It was an experiment where I believe a single particle was split and it was located, the two pieces were located in different places. I'm really going to screw this up, but entanglement is this principle whereby you can act on one part of the particle and the other part of the particle, I'm messing this up.
It's called entanglement entropy.
Yeah, and that.
Essentially what it means is that if you do something to one thing, then you're going to not necessarily have its negative and positive effects. Again, folks, that's not what we're saying. But what it is that it will partition into two separate things. And
where I'm going with this is that I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the kind of result of this experiment was the discovery that information travels faster than the speed of light, that information is instantaneous, that the observation of one part of the one particle had an effect on the other particle, even though they were not connected in space. So I love the fact that he wants to send information back through time, and I completely believe that that's possible. Geneva, 1947, I'm totally messing up, but there's this experiment where they did this thing and entanglement was like the thing that came out of it.
I need to do research on that one. That one I definitely need to do some research on, because actually I'm looking right now and looking at the entanglement entropies and in the physics that goes into it, and it's all mathematics, folks.
It's all energy. Everything's all connected in time and space.
Yeah, because, well, one of the things that's interesting is that when you have items, you have information, you have the yin and the yang, the positive, the negative, the whatever you've got, that we've been able to, again, quantify that in what's called binary code. You have your zeros, you have your ones. And then depending on the system that you put those things together, then you have information. And that's actually what Dr. Mallett is doing. That, again, going back to what we talked about in the last episode, you have these things called neutrinos, the empty space, the smallest particle that you have within an atom, that you can use those and you can use their spin. And that's actually how the two gentlemen got their Nobel Peace Prize, is that they were able to give a mass, A quantifiable mass to those neutrinos.
Okay.
And, well, if you have mass, then they're going to be able to exhibit those items that we talked about before, in particular vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So if you send neutrinos, and again, I'm paraphrasing, folks, but if you send that information back by way of the spin, whether it's a positive spin or a negative spin, and that doesn't mean an angle, but literally the things will have a catatonic, meaning negative, or positronic anionic message, that you can send that in the form of a binary code. And
yeah,
and that's
that
what he's trying
sense.
To do. He's not
sense.
Sending a person back.
No, but even in terms of people, from a biological standpoint, again, I'm going to totally screw this up because I can't remember the names of the doctors or where this took place, but it was an experiment in which the area of the brain that controls sensation or, mm-hmm. or receives sensation, again, I'm messing this up, receives sensation from your right hand. So it's, you know, your right
left
hand,
side,
maybe the
left
hemisphere.
Side of the brain, right.
So, for example, something touched the right hand of the person being experimented on, and they noted where in the left hemisphere of the brain that information showed up. So then
That's
they do this
the
other
neuroscience.
Thing.
So cool.
So then they did it in reverse. They touched the area of the brain expecting the right hand to receive the sensation, and it didn't work. And so what came out of this, and I'll try to find the article that I was reading because it was like just so massively cool. What they figured out is that obviously the act of sensation, the energy and the impulses and the nerve function and everything that goes from the tip of your finger all the way up your arm, across your shoulder, up your neck, into your head and into your brain takes, quote, time. But what they discovered from this experiment is that somehow the sensation, the acknowledgement, the experience of the sensation in your fingertip was sent backwards in time to your brain so that it was instantaneous. They happened in the same now. There, you know, you would think there'd be a delay. I touch my finger here, wait, the brain responds. But I'm going to have to find this for you because you're looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? Well, so I will definitely find this article. But here we are at the, you know, we're talking about time and we're at the 1:12 mark and I'm going to have to wrap this up because God knows I love talking to Melvin and
yeah,
I can continue
like
talking.
Wait a minute, I have all these things.
I know.
It's like, oh,
so
I guess that means
we'll
have to come back.
So why don't we just agree that we will come back and do this again and we'll keep talking about time and other cool metaphysical and classic science things. But for those of you who are out there listening, first of all, thank you for your time.
Thank
you. Appreciate that. I hope that we've given you some things to think about today, that we've given you, if not some new ideas, then maybe a new perspective, some things to research. If you don't take away anything else from this episode, I want you to take away the fact that you are in control of your experience. How you spend your time in this human existence, how you choose to walk the earth, and who you choose to spend these experiences with, that's all up to you. You have literally all the time in the universe. It's a matter of how you choose to prioritize it. And I hope that you'll do whatever makes you feel good. For Elemental Abundance, I'm Mia Zachary. And until next time, I wish you joy.